Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. We are the Ladies of Groundworks, Inc. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus-Krieg.
And very shortly, we're going to start designing, installing, and maintaining gardens in and around New York City.
I cannot wait.
I know. We've gotten like 17 snowstorms.
It's like every other day.
It's horrible. And on We Dig Plants, we aim to bring the culture to horticulture. And the culture of gardens and horticulture is vast. And nothing represents that enormity of information, expertise, and green-fingered characters more than the internet, or internets, as some people like to call it.
Internets.
And of course, gardens have been written about since the beginning of human history, first in books and magazines, and then, of course, radio and TV and podcasts. And, you know, garden knowledge and traditions and ideas have been disseminated to the public in these ways very effectively. But nothing could prepare us for the radical change that the internet brought to our individual and collective patch of ground. Because for the first time in history, we have access to a world of ideas, opinions, and people at the tip of our fingers and very, very quickly.
Yeah.
So today's show, we delve into the virtual world of gardening, the blogosphere, where opinions and pundits abound. And to help us through this virtual universe is Kathy Purdy, who has one of the top gardening blogs, according to BlogRank, in its list of top 50 gardening blogs. It's called Cold Climate Gardening. But before we go forward, we want to talk about, we want to go back a little bit and talk about another influencer, although he wasn't called that at the time, and acknowledge our horticultural hero this week, who, like today's guest, was an upstate New Yorker. So take it away.
All right. So our horticultural hero of the week is A.J. Downing. A native of the Hudson River Valley, Andrew Jackson Downing was the most influential landscape gardening expert in 19th century America. He wrote dozens of articles for horticultural magazines, and in 1841 published his first book, A Treatise on the Theory and Practice of Landscape Gardening, Adapted to North America. It was the first book of its kind published in the United States, and it was a rejection of the well-ordered European-style gardening, and it was in favor of the picturesque style. So it's very gracefully written, handsomely illustrated, and this book became an immediate success, and Downing's principles established a national style for landscapes and gardens in harmony with nature. By the mid-1840s, Downing's reputation was impeccable, and he was, in a way, a celebrity of his day. This afforded him a friendship with Luther Tucker, a publisher and a printer from Albany, New York, who hired Downing to edit his new journal, The Horticulturalist, and Journal of Rural Art and Rural Taste, was first published under Downing's editorship in the summer of 1846. The journal was his most frequent influence on society and operated under the premises of horticulture, pomology, botany, entomology, rural architecture, landscape gardening, and unofficially dedicated public welfare in various forms. It was in this journal that Downing first argued for a New York park, which in time became Central Park here in the city. It was in this publication that Downing argued for state agricultural schools, which eventually gave rise. And it was here that Downing worked diligently to educate and influence his readers on refined tastes regarding architecture, landscape design, and even various moral issues. Downing also had a profound influence on Frederick Law Olmsted and Calvert Vaux, the designers of Central Park, as well as other important parks across the country. This influence naturally trickled down to homeowners and changed the way we view the relationship between house, garden, and landscape forever. So Downing really was ahead of his time, and that's what makes him unique, in that he shared so much of his ideas with the public. So our guest today is following the same tradition of Downing as a great garden communicator. Carmen.
Kathy Purdy has been gardening in the cold climate of upstate New York for over 25 years and writing at coldclimategardening.com since 2002. She has written for Fine Gardening, Horticulture, and The American Gardener. Kathy lives with her husband and children on 10 acres in upstate New York, where she gardens as much as the short growing season will allow. She has a special interest in colchicums and heirloom narcissus, which I also love, but loves any plant that will happily grow where she does. Kathy has been nominated for the Garden Bloggers Hall of Fame. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad. We were supposed to do the show in the dead of winter in January, but we got snowed in, and now it's still winter, so it's perfectly appropriate that we still have a show about cold climate gardening, because it's right. Very cold. So tell us a little bit about what got you into gardening and eventually writing about gardens and horticulture.
Well, I've always had an affinity for plants. I remember being in grade school and following around my neighbor as she was planting marigolds and peppering her with questions, and she finally gave me the last six plants and told me to go home and plant them. I think that was her way of getting rid of me. So, you know, I had houseplants in high school, and my mom let me plant daffodils in the yard, but I really didn't know much about gardening, and I felt frustrated by that. Well, fast forward to Thanksgiving 1989, and we moved into our first house. It was a 19th century farmhouse and 15 acres. And I was told the previous owner's wife had loved gardening, but she had died 10 years before we bought the house. So I spent the whole first winter wondering what would come up in the yard.
Right.
And that winter, it got down to 30 below zero several times. So I figured out I was in zone four, and I really could not, you know, you'd read a general book on perennial gardening, and you'd find out, you know, hardy zone 5 to 9 or hardy to zone 5 to 7. So many times it seemed to end at zone 5. And I've always enjoyed writing, too, so it was kind of inevitable that these two interests would eventually coincide. A lot of people in my family are very computer literate, and they showed me how to use Blogger back in 2002. And so I started a blog then, mostly to share what I found out the hard way, but also hopefully to find other people who could, you know, give me a hint or two.
Yeah. So, we mentioned in the intro that you are one of the top gardening blogs. What do you think makes your blog so unique and so successful?
Well, I think one thing that made it successful is that it was one of the first. So people who, you know, even if they didn't have a cold climate, but they were hungry to find other gardeners online.
Right.
Some of my first readers were from Texas.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, there's, you know, Austin, Texas is like, they've got Dell there, they've got Intel there. It's a very high-tech area, and they can garden almost year-round.
Right.
So, a lot of the first bloggers that I know were reading my blog, and I was reading theirs, were from Texas. And I think, you know, I'm not afraid to tell people my mistakes.
Yeah.
One blog post I wrote, not this fall, but the fall before, was, you know, I've got 45 containers of plants that I never got into the ground, and here's how I'm going to try and pull them through the winter.
Uh-huh.
And I think people do respond to, you know, It's not Martha Stewart gardening. Things go wrong. You get busy. You don't plant those plants you swore you were going to plant.
Yeah.
And this is how you can bring them through the winter in their containers so that you can plant them next spring when hopefully things will be less hectic.
Oh, because we've all done that.
I mean, yeah.
Gardeners by nature are an acquisitive bunch, don't you think, Kathy? Like, we want more than
our... hoarders.
We're hoarders in a way, and we want more than our space allows, you know? So my garage is filled with quite a few things that never made it into the ground, and I'm hoping to get them through this pretty tough winter this year.
Yeah.
So you said some of your earliest readers or followers were, you know, from Texas, where there was like a tech hub of people. Tell us about your readers now. You know, where they're from and what they're looking for from your blog now. I'm sure it's evolved enormously in the past, you know, 12 or 13 years.
I think it has evolved. My readers are mostly from the United States and Canada, and I know I have some readers in the Netherlands, Sweden, Switzerland, you know, the northern northern Europe. And most of the time they're starting out the same place I did. You know, it's so cold here. Everybody says nothing will grow, but I don't believe that. I just need to find that information somewhere.
Right.
And
so are you still in zone 4, Kathy?
You know,
or has it changed? Has it warmed up?
Well, the winters have gotten a bit warmer, but a lot of times we still get a late frost.
Yeah.
So what I've been telling people is that I have a zone 5 winter and a zone 4 growing season.
Oh, right.
Because I have the late frost in spring and sometimes an early frost in the fall.
Right.
But
how cold has it gotten up there? Where you are this year? What's the coldest?
I think we got to minus 22, which puts me back into zone 4, which is minus 20 to minus 30.
Wow. Wait, what county are you in New York?
Shenango County.
Okay.
It's basically a dairy area.
And how's
but
this?
We're still commuting distance to Binghamton, which is
okay.
Kathy?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I thought maybe we lost you. So tell us some more stats. We always like statistics. How many followers do you have, and how do you keep growing your audience, especially now that there's so much?
Well, visitors to my blog average about 20,000 a month, but the traffic is very seasonal. For example, in May, I'll have 1,000 visitors a day. But in December, it'll drop down to under 400.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm not really bending over backwards to try and grow my audience. I just try and write good articles that are helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, either they follow me and they're reading them, or they're searching on Google for something I'm writing about and they find me that way. But I'm not, like, trying to get Twitter followers or Facebook followers or, you know, really working hard to drum up a following. Because I do think, you know, cold climate gardening is a niche and, you know, not everybody's going to be interested in it.
Right. What blogs do you follow?
Well, you know, I told you that, a lot of the first ones I followed were in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And what those Texas gardeners did is start the first garden bloggers. They called it Spring Fling, and now we just call it Fling, where they invited any garden bloggers in the country to come visit them. And, you know, we visited gardens together. It was sort of like a convention.
Right.
And so a lot of the blogs I follow are from friendships I made during that first garden bloggers fling.
Yeah.
They're all over the country, Indiana, Oklahoma, some in Texas, Tennessee, Rhode Island, really all over.
Yeah, the conference was just last week, wasn't it? The bloggers?
That's the Garden Bloggers Conference.
Okay.
That's been started more recently, and that has a very strong professional blogger thrust to it. You know,
how
to get more followers, how to get
advertising.
Sponsors.
Yeah, right.
The Garden Bloggers Fling, the next one is going to be in Toronto this year, and it's really a lot more of a social event.
That sounds fun.
It is. It's the best kind of vacation a garden blogger could have.
Yeah. Are you also sharing plants with anybody?
Some of the same gardeners that I follow, I have shared plants with. I don't think I'll be doing too much of that at this fling because getting plants across the border is a little more involved.
Yeah.
But I have brought plants to Fling, and I have mailed plants to people that I met through blogging.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we met some great people at Garden Writers Association. Like, Dee Nash has a great blog, Red Dirt Ramblings. I love her blog.
And we've traveled a lot.
She is one of the ones I follow.
Yeah.
And we've traveled a lot with plants on our lap as well.
I know.
On the airplane. Not the most comfortable situation.
So I'm going to ask you probably a politically incorrect question, Kathy. So you go over the border to Canada. How are the gardeners different there? Or are we just...
They're nicer.
Are they nicer than we are? I just want to know.
I haven't been to Toronto yet, but I did get to go to Quebec for the Garden Writers Association symposium there.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were very kind to us considering we didn't speak French.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, we were the foreigners, and they were very accommodating and switched to English mostly for us.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Quebec was wonderful because that would be United States Zone 4, and there were just some really fabulous gardens.
Oh yeah, one of the most famous gardens is I don't know if it's in Quebec or in another region. It's Quatre Vents, the Four Winds.
Yes, I got to go there.
How
was
that?
One of the side trips.
Oh, I always wanted to see that garden because I've heard him come speak years ago, and I, you know, just seeing slide photos of it, it's an incredible garden.
It is incredible, and it's kind of adventurous.
Yes, especially for that zone.
You probably saw on the slides the rope bridge.
Yeah.
And then he has a whole Japanese tea house, and one thing I liked is there's a certain area where you walk in, it just looks like a path, but all of a sudden you realize you look to your right and there's a mirror. You look to your left and there's a mirror. And it's like a hall of mirrors kind of effect.
I love going to see garden personally designed gardens, ones that are designed by the owner. I always found them to be much more
intimate
and interesting, you know, they don't necessarily follow the rules that, you know, and Alice and I, this is what we do as our profession. So it's really refreshing to see something that is so quirky and weird and individual, you know.
Right. You could definitely tell he was personally involved in how the garden was designed. Right.
Yeah, we missed that one. We wanted to go to that GWA, but we didn't make it. Instead, we went to Pittsburgh, which was really great, too. That was
I did miss Pittsburgh, but
it was a great gardening town, too.
It is.
We had a lot of fun with that.
Well, we have to take a break. Stay on the line, Kathy. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to Sunday Night Chicks by Mamarazzi on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Weren't those sweet voices?
It's so cute.
I could just imagine their faces. We're here with Kathy Purdy, garden writer and blogger at the site coldclimategardening.com, one of the top gardening blogs in the blogosphere. So, Kathy, your blog is huge. It has so much information, planting information, food information, DIY, cottage gardens, opinions, essays. How do you kind of, you know, keep an overarching theme? I know it's cold climate gardening, but what else kind of binds these together? How do you keep it sounding like you, you know?
Well, I think that's because, you know, I hate to say it, but the overarching theme is me.
Is right.
I write about what I'm interested in or what I'm having trouble with, and sometimes what readers have asked me about. And, yes, I've been writing for 12 years, so I came up with those categories to kind of help people find what they're interested in.
Right. Right. So, tell us about your particular gardens and what your gardening philosophy is.
Well, my philosophy is if it's not fun, don't do it. and I tend to be kind of a laissez-faire gardener. That's probably why cottage gardening appeals to me. I like to let things self-sow and see where they pop up.
Uh-huh.
And I like to have plants that nobody else on the block does.
Uh-huh.
I love that. I love that too. I love to.
I tend to, you know, look for the smaller mail order nurseries and get something different. I'm always looking for something that will either bloom earlier or bloom later than what I've already got. The earliest daffodil, the earliest crocus.
Right. Yes.
And just trying to make the growing season a little bit longer.
Yeah.
So tell us, you said you like to share your mistakes with you know, your followers. Tell us about a gardening mistake that you made that you can now, like, look back on and laugh, that you have so much more experience and can sort of...
Well, one time I tried to create a new garden bed by laying down newspaper or cardboard and piling up, you know, good soil on top of it.
Right.
And unfortunately, the place I chose, bindweed was growing there.
Oh, no.
And I thought it was morning glory at the time.
Yeah.
And, it smothered all the other weeds, but that bindweed found a crack in the cardboard and came through. And, one of my friends told me, you know, the only way you get rid of bindweed is to move, and that's eventually what we did do, not because of the bindweed, but, yeah, and I'm paranoid about it now. Anytime I see something that remotely looks like bindweed, and there's an annual vine that does look pretty similar, but, you know, I don't care.
Yeah.
I yank it.
So tell us about some fun things that you have discovered and that you're going to try out for this 2015 season.
Oh. Well, I planted it last fall, but I haven't really got to see it grow yet. There's a clematis called Sweet Summer Love that's supposed to be fragrant, and it's supposed to grow a lot taller than some of the other clematis, so I'm looking forward to seeing how that does.
Mm-hmm.
Twining up next to my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And do nurseries send you plants to trial? Are you like in that group of people, lucky people that get like a box from the nursery?
So far, I have been. That didn't start till I started attending the Garden Writers Symposiums. Mm-hmm. And you go to the trade show and you hand out your card promiscuously to everybody.
Yeah.
I get plants to trial and I do write about them. Once I've given them a fair trial, which often is, you know, I want to wait until they've had a whole winter and see if they come through the winter. So I don't always write about them the same year that I get them.
Sure,
but,
right.
But yes, the Sweet Summer Love is one I got from Proven Winners, and it did stay in a container most of the summer, so I wanted to see how it did in the ground before.
Yeah,
I am.
Yeah, and it takes a season or two. I trial some plants in my garden first before, just from local nurseries, if I see uh-huh. something new, before we put them into clients' gardens, you know, because if it right. fails, I'm also of the low maintenance, neglect you, you know, and you have to kind of make it on your own kind of gardener, you know.
One garden blogger calls it her garden of benign neglect.
Yeah, I call it S&M gardening.
I only will pay attention to you when I want to.
That's right. You know, how much abuse can you take and like it?
So tell us about those 45 plants. What's sitting around
waiting
that will be dug in?
Most of them did get planted this year. The only ones that didn't were some trees and shrubs that I'd gotten as two plants from Forest Farm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And, I'm hoping to plant them this spring. But, you know, where I wanted to plant them was in the wilder areas around our property, and I realized I didn't have good deer protection for them yet.
Yeah.
So they spent a second winter actually snuggled up against my house with leaves piled on top of them.
Right.
But, right. Yeah, to a certain extent, a lot of my plants spent a winter in pots because I hadn't yet cleared the ground where I wanted to plant them. And most of them wound up getting planted just this past fall when I said, you know, no, I'm not going to have them all for a second winter. But as I said, you know, we did move in fall of 2011, and I'm still creating garden beds around yeah. our new house.
Right.
Well, you have how many acres?
We have 10 acres here.
Yeah, so that's so much opportunity, and also probably lots of kind of microclimates, right, Kathy, where you can kind of test things that might be a little bit more tender? Do you know?
There's a couple of warmer climates up near the house, mm-hmm. and there's several areas that are wetter further mm-hmm. away from the house. Most of the acreage is wooded. It's not.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't have 10 acres of lawn.
Have you made a meadow?
Or
is that something you want to make? I always have a fantasy of having a meadow.
There is an area that some of my grown sons cleared, and we've been mowing it once a year. So I guess you would call it a meadow, but it wasn't like
planned.
Deliberately planted as a meadow. It was just
right. It just happened. Yeah.
We just let what was there grow. Mm-hmm. At one point, probably most of our 10 acres was pasture, but in the 20th century, it was allowed to grow back.
Mm-hmm. Right, because you said it's dairy country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Out there, so
right.
So the soil must be pretty good then. I would imagine the quality.
Well. One reason why our particular area, our acreage grew back is because it wasn't especially good.
Oh.
A creek bisects our property, and it's very much clay and stone.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah, it is tough.
Yeah, that's like Connecticut. And when Alice and I have to go and do projects up there, I don't know how many times we've bent forks and spades and, you know, it's just every time you stick a spade in the ground, you hit like a boulder.
Yeah.
A boulder size.
We don't have too many boulders, but
it's rocky.
We have a lot of rocks that I have to ask help for.
Yeah.
So, Kathy, did you ever take any, like, like, did you study horticulture at all, or are you completely self-taught?
I am self-taught. I back in the days before the internet, I spent the winters reading.
Uh-huh.
I read everything I could get my hands on.
I think that's the best education.
I had a long-term subscription to fine gardening and to horticulture. I'd say I learned an American Gardener. I learned a lot from all of them.
Uh-huh.
And
just by doing, right? Yeah.
What?
Just by doing.
Yeah, just by doing. Reading and doing. And the White Flower Farm Catalog. I learned a lot from that. Just flipping through. I mean, you spend the whole winter looking at it once a day. After a while, you just absorb the names of plants.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to a neighbor down the street. And I don't know what I said, Rudbeckia or something. And she said, "You know the Latin names of plants?" And I was like, "Oh, I guess I do."
Yes. Yes, I do.
You know, I'm glad that you mentioned White Flower Farm, because when I was first learning about garden design, that was that's one of the oldest. And the way they lay it out and all the descriptions, it's like the J. Peterman catalog for plants. Like, it whets your appetite. It makes you want to learn more. And they come up with amazing combinations. For a novice gardener, it's pretty much foolproof. I mean, yes, the plants that they ship are small, and you have to be patient. You know, you have to really give it 3 years for something to look like something. But they're if you follow their sort of recipes, it is pretty foolproof. And I've learned a ton, not just about plants, but about layout and design from them. You know, sequencing bloom and things like that. So they're kind of like a wonderful old school resource.
Yeah.
You know?
It was like you said in the introduction, before we had the internet, it was a lot harder to find information.
It was.
I mean, even books. If your local library didn't have it, you didn't know it existed.
Right. Yeah.
Unless your bookstore had it. But, you know, there are a lot of books that I was more likely to find out by reading an ad in horticulture than I was by browsing the bookstore. And, you know, for the White Flower Farm Catalog was $5. It was a lot of information for $5, even if you never ordered from them.
Right.
You know, you got to learn an awful lot.
Yeah, definitely.
And they were always cutting edge, you know, with the new plant introductions. You know, there were things that were special to them.
Trends
and things like that. That was great. So now people are turning to you and to bloggers, and there's so much more information. And one of the things that you mentioned that you really love are colchicums. So we have to talk about them. Not enough people grow them. You know, fall, people think that once Labor Day comes, a lot of gardeners kind of peter out, especially novice gardeners, and they think, okay, no more blooms, like the season's over. But these colchicums are
the color is amazing, and it's
a surprise. Tell us about them and why you grow them and you know how people can succeed with growing colchicums.
Well, I mentioned that at our first house, the previous owner, the wife, was a gardener. Well, colchicums were already growing in that garden.
Mm-hmm.
And my first spring, I saw these leaves come up, and at first I thought they were tulips, but they never had any flowers. I kept bringing other gardeners to look at these leaves and tell me what they were. And finally, a neighbor, the same neighbor that was surprised I knew the Latin name of plants, said, "Oh, the neighbor that lives between us, she has those plants too." And so I went and asked her, and she said, "I don't know what they are, but they send up leaves in the spring, and the leaves die back, and you don't see the flowers until the fall." And that kind of rang a bell with me, and I actually got my White Flower Farm bowl book and discovered they were colchicums.
Yeah.
And in particular, they were Colchicum byzantinum.
Uh-huh.
And they're like centuries old. Gerard wrote about them. He called them Byzantinum because he got his first bulbs from these ladies in the Byzantine Empire.
Mm-hmm.
So they go way back. I mean, it's like it must be the oldest pass-along plant I have in my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just kind of got intrigued by them. I mean, they're just kind of a little bit weird.
Yeah.
And I kept my eyes out looking for different kinds, and I have over a dozen different kinds, two dozen different kinds now.
Wow.
And
I didn't even know that there were that many cultivars or types.
Yeah, there are. Many of them are not that common. There's two places. Odyssey Bulbs carries a lot of different ones, and another mail-order place called Daffodils and More. Well, one of the mores is colchicum.
So, Kathy, tell us a little bit about some other great nurseries that have cold climate plants that you can recommend.
Oh, well, one of my favorite ones is no longer in existence. It was Seneca Hill Perennials. Ellen Hornig owned that nursery, and she was a lot further north than I was, but it was interesting. She could grow plants from South Africa because she had such tremendous snow cover.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, she could grow like Zone 7 plants. And this is something I found out in Quebec, too. I don't know if you're familiar with pineapple lily.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Comus.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The gardeners in Quebec can grow euchomus in the ground because their snow comes before the ground even freezes, and they get like a snowpack of 2 or 3 feet, and that protects those pineapple lilies. It's not something they have to lift and store. They keep them right in the ground, and it's hardy for them because of that snow cover.
That's so interesting because here in New York, where we don't, I mean, this winter has been a bit, the last winter was exceptional with the amount of snow, but we don't get that much snow. And Alice and I treat them like annuals here.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, because they won't make it. Mm-mm. They won't.
That's the interesting thing about how much snow insulates things. Now,
yeah.
Here too, the ground usually freezes before we get snow. So that isn't that, you know, I would have to lift pineapple lilies or grow them as an annual.
Right.
Myself.
Right.
I just kind of scavenge here and there.
Uh-huh.
I don't have, like, a favorite nursery.
Right, right. It's a collection, you know, like...
I'm more likely to, you know, get a pass-along plant. Or my favorite thing to do is go to plant sales that different kinds of garden clubs have.
Yeah.
Because, especially, like... about an hour away from me is Ithaca, where Cornell is.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a chapter of the North American Rock Garden Society there.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they all grow other plants besides rock garden plants. And to go to their plant sale, you're sure to get something unusual and, you know, that is hardy enough to grow in your area. So
right.
That's my favorite trick, I guess, is to go to these... plant sales by different garden clubs, and you know what you get will be small, but it'll be something
unique,
quite different. Yeah.
And just the ability to connect with other gardeners. I'm so glad you brought up the societies.
Yes.
I think they really get the short end of the stick in this internet age, and they are such a wealth of information.
I know. Alice and I just spoke. We did a presentation. At the Indoor Gardening Society here in New York, in Manhattan, they have a chapter. And the kind of plants that were being displayed there and the amount of knowledge in that room, I was saying to Alice, there's 30 people here.
Right.
The average age was about above 60,
uh-huh.
I would say. And that knowledge, none of them were really, they weren't blogging. They're not even on, like some of them were not even on social media at all and not super computer savvy. This was their way of sharing and giving, Kathy,
right.
You know. And
right.
We were saying to them, you have to share your knowledge. You have to get it out there to the next generation.
Yeah.
And make sure that it's passed on because, like you, buying plants from the person that actually grew it, buying a cultivar or a specific plant, they're going to give you information that, you know, the typical plant catalog or the typical nursery, you know, employee is not going to know. They
right.
know things that they
right.
can share with you to help you succeed.
Yeah.
Because they've probably been growing it a while, you know, if they have enough to share, you know?
Right. Or it's easy to grow.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
Well, the Rock Garden Society, I belong to it, not because I'm personally not that interested in rock garden plants, but, you know, these are people that not only know the Latin names of plants, but they grow them all but from seed.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, they know exactly what that plant does at every stage of its life.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're hardcore.
Yeah.
We've been to a few Rock Garden Society meetings, and they are the most serious, you know, of the societies.
But I have to say, the Herb Society has the best food.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely. Well, Kathy, I want to ask you one final question. We did notice that you welcome others to list their blogs on your site. And Alice and I found that to be very open and generous of you. What are the criteria for the kind of content and style that you're looking for, or is there a criteria? How do you decide who you're going to sort of link up with?
The only criteria I really have is that they are also gardening in a cold climate.
Okay.
And sometimes I do have to go and poke around their site a little bit to figure that out, because not everyone likes to broadcast the area they're from. But that got started way back when I first started blogging. I'm not sure if Google was around yet. There was some rudimentary search features, but it was a lot harder to find garden blogs.
Right.
And I used to actually, that would be the topic of a post. Oh, I found a new garden blog. You know, and so I started out just keeping like a links on my sidebar, and then that got too bulky, and I switched it to a page of its own.
Mm-hmm.
But it used to be very hard to find other garden blogs. Any garden blog I found, I would check their sidebar to see who they were linking to.
Right.
Ah,
and
yeah.
Somewhere, I think it was like 2008, all of a sudden it kind of exploded. And it was like, instead of, you know, knowing everybody that was a garden blogger, all of a sudden everyone I knew was like one lunch table, and, you know, there's a cafeteria of hundreds.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of people I didn't know. And it just got to be unwieldy, and I had to say, okay, I'm primarily serving cold climate gardeners, so that's who I'm going to limit it to.
Yeah.
Because it's really just for gardeners to find other bloggers, other sources of information.
Yeah. Well, I really love that you are so open, and, you know, you keep using the word pass-along plant, which is a nice old kind of southern term.
Yeah.
And I just really like the sharing, and I think that's what gardening is all about. And,
well, I do too.
You know, and it's just really refreshing to talk about that and you know, in this kind of fast, slick media frenzy
where people are just
world. Posting
pictures,
yeah,
of things. Alice and I always laugh about this. Tons of people on Instagram constantly posting photos of plants, and they don't say what it is. They don't know anything.
Look at the swirls on this leaf.
Yeah,
you're like,
just pretty, pretty.
Why don't you mention what the leaf is?
No, to actually go to a site where there's actual usable information,
yeah,
is great. And we,
yeah,
thank you. I know it probably takes hours and hours of your time to really create the site and to create all the content. And we thank you for that, and we appreciate it. And that's why we wanted to have you on, so that more people can find you. So if you want to mention one more time, Kathy, the name of the site and a little bit about what you're working on in the next few weeks.
Well, the site is coldclimategardening.com. It's primarily a blog, but I do have several pages of links to cold climate gardens, public gardens, cold climate online information.
Great.
Anytime I found something that I thought would be helpful, I put it on a page of other links that are similar.
Uh-huh.
I guess in the next few weeks I'll be doing book reviews, and once mud season shows up, I will be probably writing a post or two about mud season. I already have several from previous years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
The daffodils will be blooming.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank God. That's what I said yesterday when I flipped the calendar over, and it was March 1st, and the snow is still coming down, and it was gray and ugly, and, you know, it's just the beginning of March is like the it's really when the seasonal affectiveness disorder kicks in for me.
Yeah, and our snow is black.
It's
Kathy.
Black because it's just filthy with car smog.
I posted a picture of a pile of snow on my Facebook page.
It is the worst.
And somebody said, "Oh, is that? I thought that was dirt." I was like, "No, that's the color of our snow in New York City now."
But here's the bright light. In another month, it will be April 1st.
Yeah.
And that knowledge gets you through this month, you know?
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for being on the show. Unfortunately, we've come to the end. We'd love to have you on again in the future, maybe sometime in the summer when it's not, we can talk about summer plants and the excitement of what's growing and flowering in our gardens then.
All right.
Thank you, Kathy. It's a beautiful blog.
So if you missed any part of the show, you can see it on our website, heritageradionetwork.com, or you can listen to it on iTunes.
And Stitcher.
And please remember to leave comments or join our Facebook page, Groundworks Inc., We Dig Plants, or our Instagram account, at Groundworks Gardens NYC, to follow us on our rambling and sometimes slightly irreverent garden path. I wanted to do a shout out to last week's giveaway winner, Lori Robinson, who's from Spur, Texas, which I think is a great name for a town, especially in Texas.
She's got some boots on.
Yeah. And also wanted to thank all of our newest followers. We've topped 650 followers, so we're really proud of that milestone. So keep on sending your friends and family over to follow us. And thanks for listening.
Happy gardening.
The theme song for We Dig Plants is provided by Paul Andrew Watling.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.